Welcome to Radio Gorgeous. This is a spot on well-being, and I have the privilege of being in the lovely garden of Isabel Losada, author of Sensation, Adventures in Sex, Love, and Laughter. She's also the best-selling author of The Battersea Road to Enlightenment. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hello, Donna. Good morning. Isn't it lovely in the sunshine today?
Yes, it is. Tell us a bit about you, because the Battersea Road...
Battersea Park Road, Donna, just to get
Battersea
it right.
Battersea Park Road to Enlightenment.
That's
yes.
It. Perfect.
Excellent. Tell us a little bit about your background, because this Sensation is actually your sixth book.
Yes.
And you've done a lot of work on the pursuit of happiness, peace, and contentment.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that journey.
Well, goodness, where to start? Yes, as you rightly say, happiness is my overall subject, and I've looked at it in many different ways. And in the Battersea Park Road to Enlightenment, which has been the best-selling book, what I did is I wanted to explore all the weird and wonderful ways out there that you can go and learn about becoming a happier, more centered, more well-adjusted person. So I went and did all the weird and wonderful courses out there, everything from these big American workshops that tell you how to live a better life, through to past life workshops, through to
rebirthing.
Colonic irrigation, rebirthing, the whole lot. And my idea was not to make fun of the workshops, although in England we do love to make fun of everything that's American. We just think we know better before we've even got there, of course. But in order really to make fun of my own preconceived ideas about these areas and to find out what is genuinely of worth in all these areas and how they can contribute. And so that started a sort of mind, body, spirit journey looking at all these levels that then continued through the subsequent books. And I've looked at all the things that contribute to happiness and well-being. So the book after that, For Tibet with Love, was looking at how we can be of service in the world and how we can make a difference to a cause that we believe in, and so on.
And I think it's important to say that this is what I would call immersive journalism. So you're putting yourself through these experiences. You're
yes.
not exploring from the outside. And it seemed to me in reading Sensation is also that you're not judging the other people involved in this. You are judging yourself, and
yes.
you are, you know, and you are saying what works for you and what hasn't worked for you, etc. And so then you come to this exploration. You said, "Well, all this work and contentment and happiness, and then also love. There's something missing there."
Well, it was not so much. Well, in this famous trilogy of mind, body, and spirit. We notice that the word body is in the middle of that trilogy, and what's happened is that the exploration of body has become, in to many women, exclusively related to yoga classes and diet and exercise and what clothes we wear. And it's almost been forgotten that the body itself is a source of happiness and a source of pleasure. And when once somebody said to me, "Well, Isabel, if you're interested in the mind, body, spirit, and you're interested in happiness, how come you've never explored sex?" And I thought about it for about a week, and I realized that the answer is cowardice, frankly, pure cowardice and fear of looking at the subject and fear of the judgments that people make about it, especially the way I work, which, as you say, is using myself as a guinea pig to explore these different areas. If I was going to explore sexuality, I was going to have to write about my own sexual experience. But I've always tried to not do something because of fear. In fact, obviously, that's part of what I teach. If you're frightened of something, go explore it. So that's how I came to be writing a book about sexuality. And in doing that, I've discovered why nobody goes there, nobody touches it. I mean, if we think of the spiritual teachers of the world, they're almost exclusively celibate. And if they're not celibate, they're certainly not writing about sex. And as soon as you start to explore it, you find why that's the case.
Why? It's funny because that's not necessarily the conclusion I would come to.
It's not.
No.
Right.
Because I think, okay, so some of the things You also are exploring this, you proposed, and the book is shaped around a year of exploring pleasure. Mm. And the point is to focus on pleasure and not to focus on sex, and that was, but it's also your focus was sexual pleasure within a committed heterosexual relationship. That was the framework that you were...
That's just because the category I'm in.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so therefore it required the participation of your partner as well, which was, that would be one thing where I would think it would be an uncomfortable starting place.
Well, actually it was his suggestion.
Excellent.
He was very keen to explore it because he said, well, you do this writing where you use yourself to explore things. We're in a new relationship. Why don't we explore sexuality together? And he was a very willing participant. I mean, the cliche is that men always want more sex and women want better quality sex. Women want less sex, but when they do have sex, they want a better quality experience. Men just want anything that will pass as sex, you know. And so he was very open to exploring all these areas. Very, very enthusiastic and very interested and very engaged. And no, he had a fantastic year. He was very happy with it.
But and also, because that really required... I think you couldn't have done this book before you did all of your other work.
No, I'd agree.
Yeah, because it did take a lot of talking, trust. These are scary... These are scary areas. A lot of issues around trust in a relationship, exposure, intimacy. A lot of those things, I think, came up for you guys when you were exploring different what would we call modalities? I don't know, different experiences.
Yes.
Mm. And some of the first, so within that framework, you said, okay, let's go.
Yeah.
Fine. I'll do it in the same way I did it before. I have a willing and supportive and partner.
Yes.
I'll get to it. And one of the experiences which I wanted to explore a little bit with you was around oming, because
yes.
Radio Gorgeous listeners will have been introduced to oming already, actually.
Yes, yes.
But through a very different framework. Emily Witt in Future Sex was really exploring, as a single woman, she was exploring... And as a young single woman, she was exploring what does free love look like now to my generation.
Oh, interesting.
And it's a very different framework to have introduced oming. And that was also, interestingly, relatively early in her also immersive exploration. So, one, could you explain what oming is?
I'd like to actually tell you a little bit about how we stumbled on oming. Because we were exploring the tantra path, I'd done a women's workshop, we'd done a couples workshop, and I was doing a lot of reading in the year. I mean, I read everything that I could lay my hands on through the year about sexuality, and I was reading Mantak Chia, who is the man who talks about the multi-orgasmic couple, the multi-orgasmic man, and he writes about how men can learn in the tantric tradition to separate the orgasm from the ejaculation. So I was reading Mantak Chia and I was getting increasingly irritated by him, because when you start to explore these books, you find that the exercises for the men are all purely on the physical level. So it's like, in order to separate the orgasm from the ejaculation, you need to do this, you hold the penis here, blah, 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 you practice this, and it was all purely physical. For the women, when you start exploring the sexuality, it's always, now let's go back and look at your first sexual experience and let's look at how you feel. And it always starts from the assumption that you've got these major sexual issues in your head that you need to overcome, because inevitably these books are written by men. And so if a woman isn't, I hope it's less so now, but certainly in that generation, if a woman wasn't orgasmic in the same way that a man was, the men automatically assumed there was something wrong with her going back to her childhood. So I was getting more and more irritated by this as I read more and more books that seemed to be propounding this same viewpoint. So, and I complained to one of the the tantric teachers about this, and she said, oh, don't read Mantachia, that's very much the male perspective, read Slow Sex by Nicole Daydon. And that was how I stumbled on this sexual work that was more from a woman's point of view. And so I read the book, and I asked my partner if he'd be willing to explore this with me. And what was so interesting about it is it was completely, the focus on female pleasure was very much one that was unique in the reading that I'd been doing.
Mm-hmm. And what it is, it is...
Oh, I need to tell you what it is. Sorry.
Yes. A goalless practice, which is also interesting.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. It's a practice where... And there are a lot of people in the world that practice this very seriously and conscientiously, but it's a practice where the man learns to stroke the woman's clitoris, and it's done outside the context of the bedroom. It's done almost like a meditation practice for 15 minutes, as I say, outside the bedroom, so you sort of disconnect it from sexuality. The man is fully clothed, and the man is... stroking with his left hand because it's more sensitive. They're very specific about how it's done, so the lips are pulled back very gently with the thumb and the second finger, and with the first finger he strokes the clitoris with no more firmness than you would stroke your eyelid, with a lube of the right viscosity, and he strokes that for 15 minutes. And that gives the woman a chance to explore the levels of sensation that are experienced during that practice. And it gives the man the opportunity to really focus on what the woman is feeling. Now, during the normal sexual act, what happens is because the man's sensation is both easier to access and arises more strongly, and it overcomes him, and so then he loses his sense of what the woman is feeling, and so you get a disconnect. And what various sexual practices, not only Oming but the various tantric practices, teach is for the man to remain connected with a woman's level of arousal
and her sexual energy. A couple of things came up for that. One of the things that Emily Witt said, which I thought was very interesting for women of my generation, I'm 50, is that, you know, what she got out from Nicole and meeting her in person was turning the whole idea of attraction on its head. You know, whereas, you know, we used to, when we were young women, go into a room, it was like, who likes me? And responding to whoever likes us. Whereas Nicole walks into a room, it's like, who am I attracted to? You know, as the first, just turning that around. And that was very powerful. And for you, I mean, I think it was very powerful, tell me if I'm wrong, to be able to speak about your pleasure and what you found pleasurable and what you didn't find pleasurable, and that being a very, very difficult thing
yes.
for us to access.
Yes. I, like many women, I'd been 7 years in a marriage where, you know, the sex had been terrible, and, I mean, poor man, he'd been doing his best, and he had no idea how to please me, and I had no idea how to tell him to please me.
Or that you were supposed to.
I had no vocabulary, I had no means, I didn't want to upset him, you know, I didn't want to say, actually, darling, I can't feel this, you know, I mean, I was just completely, I had no idea how to go about that. And I think that is very prevalent in women, that the women, one of the things that I believe leads to sexual estrangement is that women and men are making love, the woman's not feeling what the man thinks she's feeling, he's doing his best. She doesn't want to say, darling, actually, my level of sensation just went down rather than up. She's maybe not even aware of that. She's trying to look after his feelings. She knows he's doing his best. He's doing what he thinks is right. He's influenced by the porn industry, so often he thinks it's got to be harder and longer and firmer, and she just wishes that he'd get on with it. And so you get this real breakdown of communication in what's supposed to be a very intimate and loving place, but the woman just can't bring herself to say, darling, I'm not enjoying this, you know. And so what she does, because she's looking after his feelings, bless her, she will come up with 1,001 reasons why she doesn't want to have sex. Or she will do what many women get trapped into doing, which is exaggerating the level of pleasure she's feeling by making various sounds and various movements that indicate that she's really having a good time when actually she isn't. And I'm not talking about faking orgasm, although obviously many women do. I'm just talking about exaggerating the level of pleasure to keep the man happy. So you have this terrible breakdown in communication, of which I'm as guilty as all the other women that are doing this. Certainly that was the way my sex life was for 7 years or more. And so in entering into this new relationship, I really didn't want to do that. And what the OM practice, there's one particular part of the OM practice that, I don't just want to speak exclusively about OM, but there's one particular part of this practice where the man is taught to ask specific questions. Would you like a little more pressure? Would you like a little more speed? And all the woman has to say is yes or no. And I'm reading the book thinking, thank God I can do that. I can get the words yes or no to come out of my mouth. But what I didn't have before is I didn't have a vocabulary whereby I could communicate that. And so that was extremely helpful for me, because I really had to learn how to communicate from really the simplest level. Would you like more of this or more of that? Yes or no? Yes. Any woman can manage to say the words yes or no if the right questions are asked.
And that for me was also a very powerful statement, is that, you know, yes, we're taught, I mean, Radio Gorgeous is all about, you know, giving voice to women. And then that's one part of our lives where we're like, oh, right, I haven't done that yet.
Absolutely, Donna. I mean, I am the most out there. I have no fear of public speaking. I can speak to 2,000 people in an audience for 2 hours without looking at a note. I mean, I am communicator extraordinaire. But get me in an intimate situation with the man I'm making love with, and absolutely, I'm incapable of communicating. And I think that the man that I was in relationship with was at first very confused about this, because he met this amazing, powerful, dynamic woman that can communicate, that can, you know, run events, that can hold, you know, that can do all these things.
And is in touch with her feelings, and talks about
articulate,
them.
Exactly, all these things, emotionally literate. And I had to explain to him, in this area, you're dealing with a child. You're dealing with a girl of about 18 that is completely unable to express herself, to ask for what she wants, who doesn't even know what she wants. So he had to learn about this. And I was said to him, don't make jokes about this. This is a vulnerable area. You can make jokes about everything else, but this is sensitive. So please treat this area of my persona with care and, you know, with tenderness.
Yeah. And so I guess one of the things that you're saying of why people don't then explore this, yes, and they don't talk about sex, even if, you know, all the, you know, enlightenment gurus, is because the one thing leading from finding your own voice that I did, you know, the one sure thing you can say is that you are 100%, like everything else, you are 100% responsible for your sexuality and your
sadly,
sexual, you know, like
you
everything
are.
Else.
It sucks, doesn't
yes.
it? The first time anybody came along and said, you're 100% responsible for your life, I wanted to hit them. But the fact is, the more we can take that belief on, the more we empower ourselves.
Yes.
I mean, you know that we and yes, sadly, it is another area where women, this is why I start the book with a women's workshop, because as I say, I mean, in the beginning, like Tantra level one, you know, basic level, you're in a room with a group of other women and you're required to get your kit off, you know. And I mean, for many women, standing naked in front of other women is excruciatingly difficult, painful, and that's level one. And I mean, if we can't even get that, if we can't even stand in our own nakedness and not be ashamed, then how can we expect a man to appreciate us if we're not agreeing with him? Darling, you look beautiful tonight. Oh, well, no, sorry. What
You're
about my tummy?
Because...
What about my bum? What about, but my tummy's sticking out, but I've got stretch marks, but I've got this, I've got that. I mean, all these stuff. Men don't do this, apparently. My friend who's a masseur tells me that 9 out of 10 women, when they lie on a massage table, will say, oh, I'm sorry about my tummy and I'm sorry about my boobs. And they all apologise when they get their clothes off. Before they lie on the table, they apologise. Men, she says, never apologise. Doesn't matter, their beer guts can be hanging out. They, you know, they'll never apologise for their bodies. But we all do, apparently. So, you know, so we as a... What has happened to our sexuality? What has happened to us leading? What has happened to the power of female sexuality has been completely lost because we've been shamed into believing that we have to have a perfect size zero body. And of course, when you go to these women's workshops and you see women standing naked with everyone else that have got what the media says to, that there's a perfect body, they're as ashamed of it or more ashamed of it than everybody else. They think they're too thin, they're too tall, they're too short, their eyebrows are the wrong shape. I mean, women's
we'll
shame of their bodies.
We'll find something to pick on.
Exactly. And so you have to start there. And when you go to a workshop and you find a woman who is what the world would call obese, but she's done this work and she stands there and she says, I love my stomach because it reminds me of giving birth to my child, and I love my arms because they're strong, and I love my legs because they're powerful. You go, wow, that's sexy. That's a woman that is attractive because she's not apologising for her body. So we have to start there. And listen, men have got nothing to do with this. I don't give men any responsibility for this at all. It's women that have got to, we've got to do our own work and come to love, I mean, love and accept our bodies, not to mention what's between our legs, which somehow we've been brainwashed into seeing as ugly. How did that happen? You know, and labioplasty, women having their inner lips cut off because they've seen a porn magazine. They think the woman looks like that and they're supposed to look like that. So we have women having themselves cut in order to go up to some standard. And you know, 1,000 vulvas are as different as 1,000 faces. There is no normal vulva. Please, if you just get one thing from this podcast... There is nothing wrong with what's between your legs. They are as different as the human face. And they're to be... And why is it that we can't see that part of the human body as beautiful? Please, learn to see that part of the body as beautiful. Okay, lecture over. Sorry about that. I have a little rant when we get round to that one. I just feel so sad for womankind.
Yeah. It's squandrous of our energy.
Exactly.
And speaking of energy, you know, some of the things that you found... So there's a lot of exploration. There's an exploration of orgasms, all the different kinds of orgasms. There's breath orgasms.
Oh, I joke in the book that I discovered 11 forms of orgasm, 10 of which I haven't had. So, you know.
But in all of that, that there is something important about sexual energy. And there's something important about sexual energy to us, pleasure, sexual energy, something. There's something about that energy that, of any age, of any infirmity, being connected to your body, and that is a part, the sensual aspect of our body, that is a part of our body and a part of our energy.
That is so much lost, Donna.
Yeah.
It's so much lost. And I mean, we have an epidemic of mental illness, we have an epidemic of depression, of suicide, and here I am desperately jumping up and down going... Hello. I mean, I went to a talk last year in a bookshop in London, and there were four authors on the stage, and they were all talking about anxiety, depression, suicide. The whole lot was on the stage. And I'm sitting in the garden with my book about pleasure, having trouble getting a publishing deal. And I'm thinking, this is, I honestly believe we have an epidemic, a silent epidemic of a lack of simple, nurturing, nourishing sexuality, by which I do not mean all performance orgasmic nonsense, but just people in bed with people that they love, making their body feel good and their body and their partner's body feel good. And what's happened is, because people think that sex has to look a certain way and they feel they're failing to achieve that thing they saw on the movies, they think they're failing, and so what happens is then they become sexually estranged, and you have an epidemic of a loss of love and comfort and intimacy and closeness. It's a tragedy of epidemic proportions.
I would say there's so much in the book for people to, there's a lot of starting points for people to explore things that maybe, and I love that you leave things in very open questions and you know, make your own judgments for yourself.
Well, I'm not a teacher, I'm a learner, and so the book is full of questions. You know, why do we not still know this?
why do we not, why are we still asking about, I mean, we're still asking about clitoral orgasms and vaginal orgasms. I mean,
yes,
even
and
among,
to stimulate the clitoris or not stimulate, not
to stimulate the clitoris. I mean, even in the positive sex world, you have one group of teachers saying, touch the clitoris, and another group of teachers saying, don't touch the clitoris. And so here we are, it's 2017, and there are really fundamental questions related to female sexuality that we're still asking and that we don't have the answers to. I mean, I find this extraordinary, but I'm not saying I know the answers, and not here or in any of my books. Thank God, I'm not an enlightened being. You know, I'm not a teacher. I'm not, I have no answers. All I have is a persistence to keep asking questions. And certainly in this, as I say in this book, the only difference between, at the beginning of the book, I knew nothing. And at the end of the book, I still knew nothing, but I know what I know nothing about. I know the areas about which I know very little. That's the only difference.
Would you say, in conclusion,
yes,
would you say, you know, that you have incorporated some of the things that you've learned into your life and into your sex life?
Oh, well, yes. Yes, absolutely. I mean, as with all my books, as with the books on happiness, I mean, I go through all these different experiences and I'm really attentive to what I think is most useful. What are the takeaways? What can I put in the book for the readers that will be helpful? And I put those all in the book. I mean, please, if you read Sensation, wonderful listeners, please read it with your highlighter pen and underline anything that is useful for you practically. That is my wish. And if I've come up with two or three things that are useful, I mean, obviously we could talk for 8 hours about this. I mean, the question of arousal, the question of what it takes for a woman to want to make love in the first place, the question of attraction, the questions of desire. I mean, I explore the whole lot in the book and I ask questions. Oh, I'll say one thing in conclusion. It's really beautiful. I had an email last night from a couple. They're an elderly couple. They must be in their 60s or early 70s. And they're reading the book. She's reading one chapter and then he's reading one chapter. And they're reading it at night before they go to sleep. They're reading it out loud to each other. And then they're talking about it. And they said it's bringing us closer in whole new ways. That's so lovely. That really pleases me. So yes, so it's just a question, and really the book's written in a very informal, chatty way, and it's really just like talking to one of your girlfriends about sex, and I've learned a bit and I'm doing my best to pass it on.
I would say that is a perfect demonstration of the non-threatening approach that you took and that you kept and you provide for us.
Well, you couldn't be threatened by me. I don't know anything about anything. I'm just persistently asking questions.
Well, keep asking questions. Thank you so much, Isabel Losada.
Thank you very much.